Since this is March the 22nd, Saturday, I'm hoping that you're recording already with you all with great moments. I am also a teacher at this time, an assistant professor at Temple University, and I am teaching TV and film production there. And I started freelancing independently as a producer-director about 3 years ago. Prior to that, I had worked 8 years in commercial broadcasting for NBC and Metro Media as a television engineer. I became a member of NABET and IATSE, my affiliations with the networks. And I decided somewhere in that process of like doing a job for the commercial broadcasting and then in my off hours making films or videos to at one point decide to do either or. And I made that choice about 3 years ago to see if I would sink or swim. And I am here to witness that I'm floating, I'm not swimming, but that is my cause and creativity. Image making is power. Film and video, the most powerful and expensive visual arts, are sophisticated tools of political persuasion and history writing as well. Historically used to mutilate and stereotype, mass media has been killing women and people of color softly for some time. But the independent film and video community, particularly black independent and feminist filmmakers, create with an understanding that film and video no longer serve as mere entertainment in these dangerous times. For many independent film and video makers, the choice in our work stands often between cause or creativity, sometimes between cause or funding. Though the decision to produce alternatively outside the mainstream is essentially a political choice, independents sometimes find themselves prioritizing creativity over cause, that is, focusing on technology or aesthetics devoid of message to attain, in quotes, universality or saleability, or conversely, trivializing substantive material with the didactic or amateurish use of media. I am interested in film and video as a vehicle for social change, an alternative vision of our lives, a voice for the silenced. My work focuses on the depth and diversity of black women in non-traditional roles, with a specific eye on the empowerment process embodied in the lives and contributions of unsung black women artists. Cause is a personal foundation rooted in concerns and issues that motivate me to struggle for change. Politics is not simply ideology or affiliation or slogan, it is daily life. It is how I meet and experience the world, black, female, and lesbian. It is where I spend my money, who I sleep with, where I eat, where I live, how I interact with each of you. It is the films and videos I commit myself to making. So in this regard, cause is the source of my creativity. Commercially speaking, the personal vision that independent film and video makers are committed to highlighting, that is, the extraordinary lives of ordinary people, is our most marketable asset. It offers imagery alternative to the status quo of mainstream media, and audiences appreciate the choice. As a producer, I am keenly aware that show business is business. The average cost of most, in quotes, broadcast quality independent productions is $2,000 per minute and rising. This at a time when public and federal support for the arts and social services are disappearing under the Reagan administration. Creative funding strategy, including foreign co-production deals, limited partnerships, working with and for other independents, corporate underwriting, public television funding, private support, are being utilized in various combinations to produce independent work based on political causes. The tapes you'll see this afternoon are cases in point. The first one that you'll see, Stormy, the Lady of the Jewel Box, is a work sample of a video in progress. It chronicles the history and grandeur of the Jewel Box Review, an infamous integrated troupe of female impersonators that played the black theater circuit in the 50s and 60s. Stormy, the Lady of the Jewel Box, is a profile of the Review's MC, Stormy de la Barre, a 65-year-old mulatto woman and former male impersonator. She was the only woman in America's most unusual show of 25 men and a girl. Thank you. project affiliate. Funding for Stormy, the Lady of the Jewel Box, or as it will be formally called, its full-length production, Stormy, A Life in the Jewel Box. The funding comes from various sources because of the range of issues addressed in the documentary. The largest donor is the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, but other funding sources include fundraising benefits, the D.C. Commission on the Arts gave the project a grant, and the Gay Education Fund of Washington, D.C. is also one of the funders of this program. Gotta Make This Journey is a video profile of Sweet Honey and the Rock, who describe themselves as a radical black women's a cappella ensemble. All six of its members live and work in Washington, D.C. Now embarking on their 12th year together, Sweet Honey's music internationally serves the cause of social activism, while the context of their music remains rooted in black traditional and civil rights songs. Journey revolves around Sweet Honey's 9th anniversary concert and highlights the history and diversity of the group, their individual lifestyles and concerns, and their unprecedented outreach to the deaf community are featured as well. The documentary has aired closed captioned on PBS. The program's intent was not only to document the cross-cultural impact of Sweet Honey's work, but also to present a larger statement about how black women are empowering themselves. Additionally, Journey gives an alternative perspective of music as a weapon for social change. In this regard, there's a correlation between Sweet Honey's music and the mandate that motivates the feminist and black independent film and video communities. It is an understanding that our culture must sustain our traditions and forward our struggle. Journey was funded by two grants. The initial money was awarded by WETA's Independent Minority Producers Laboratory. WETA is the local PBS station in Washington. Matching funds were solicited from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Finally, I'd like to place myself in perspective. I'm one of a growing number of black independent filmmakers who are expanding into video. I'm one of roughly 15 black women across the country who are working independently in film or video. Among the most innovative and prolific black women film video makers are Kathleen Collins, with two award-winning features to her credit, Monica Freeman, whose film Valerie set a precedent for documentaries about black women artists, Ayoka Chenzira, who works in both film and video, Sharon Larkin, Julie Dash, and Carol Blue, who are all West Coast-based and UCLA Film School graduates. After the screening of Stormy and Journey, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. I came to film and video making through theater, and my fervor for these mediums was fueled by my mother, who was an avid movie fan and theater goer. It was her passion for the art of filmmaking and acting that first introduced me to names like Vincent Minnelli, Frank Capra, Edith Head, Adrian, and movie stars like Joan Crawford, Loretta Young, and Dorothy Dandridge, Hollywood's first black film goddess. After becoming active in Washington, D.C. community theater during high school, I majored in film production at Temple University. My decision to switch from theater to film study was deeply influenced by the urgency of the black nationalist and women's movements of the early 70s. The impetus to control one's body, history, destiny, filtered through these concurrent liberation struggles of black people and women, and left an indelible mark on me. Black nationalism and feminism kindled my political awareness, and they ultimately were the catalysts that keep me seeking a synthesis between politics and my daily life and work. In a sense, the work screened here today can be categorized as docutainment, that is, reworking the documentary genre with performance elements that convey the convictions of the women who are the focus and narrators of the production. On the other hand, I work in several mediums and various formats as the subject matter dictates. I avoid self-categorization and pursue the risks, the challenges that film and video present to me politically and artistically. As a black lesbian feminist and filmmaker, I have a passion for redefining the medium's capacity to communicate to the disenfranchised. I have a passion for creatively utilizing technology as a tool for activism, visibility, and history rewriting. Because at best, the beauty and power of film and video making mesh both cause and creativity. So first I'll show you Stormy, the Lady of the Jewel Box. That's about 8 minutes. And that will be followed by Gotta Make This Journey, which is an hour. And after that, I'll take any questions that you might have or open up the floor for discussion. Let me feed this thing.
Why does it do that?
Well, it slips out of the pause mode. When it's in a mode, either play, rewind, you know, but it's on a station that is not an actual channel, so there's a lot happening. It just slips back into the screen. Yeah, but you can get any lights. Production coordinator on their second album in the late 70s. And that's where I got to see how Sweet Honey the Rock works as a unit, collectively, how the music is formulated, how they pick the songs and sing, rehearsal process and all that. And that was even more fascinating in translating where that sound comes from when we pay, you know, $10 to hear them. Just seeing the things, the workings, the inner workings of the group and who they were individually for such a cross range of black women embodied in one group. It was just there for me. So I kept the idea a long time, told them I was interested in doing something, you know, don't lose the faith as I try to find the money. And that actually came through in 82. And once I, you know, said, well, here are these grants, the idea is still fresh, you still want to work with me, I still want to work with you. And they said, okay. They had been approached several times by other people wanting to do films and videos and all that. But they were waiting for the right producer. A producer who they felt they had some political alignment with and in fact could work collaboratively with. So in this instance, Creative Control took on a new dimension in that it was six other voices besides myself, and that was a learning process for me as a producer. So we got through it for better and for worse, but now we decided to put it for the better, and they are pleased with it. The impetus to do it was just because I think that people want to hear about Sweet Honey. I just, you know, I'm a fan and I want people to know about their work. And of course, you know, now 12 years later, it's an SRO that came along.
Could you tell us
the rest of us were all enlightened long ago.
Your fundraising efforts, how was that, doing a film about black women?
Well, because Sweet Honey already had a following of its own, a cult following at that by mainstream standards. Mm. There was already some impetus and recognition to fund an idea like this because of who Sweet Honey and the Rock is. But initially I got $30,000 from the Minority Producers Lab, which you saw at the end of the credits, which is a local grant, a laboratory of sorts, where minority producers from the Washington area work with the local PBS station to produce a show or to complete one that's in progress. So the $30,000 grant was $10,000 in terms of cash, but $20,000 in terms of personnel and facilities.
And did they get their funding from PBS?
They got some of their funding from PBS, from CPB and PBS.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm.
CPB funds is the mothership.
Right.
CPB funds PBS.
Right.
CPB is a government agency. Right. PBS is the network. And our tax dollars go into keeping public broadcasting on the air. And it, of course, funds the programs that it feels fall within the range of its viewership and ideals. Mm-hmm. The matching money, which was $35,000, was secured from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting from their program fund. They have cycles, I think, three or four times a year, if you are interested in applying. And the categories break down into children's programming, news and public affairs programming, cultural programming was dramatic. Dramatic and something was a slash there, dramatic shows. I can't fill in there, but it might be music, I'm not sure. And special events. So CPB, seeing that I already had the endorsement of WETA, which is a local PBS station, and not knowing me personally as a director, except through a previous film I had sold to PBS on Betty Carter, the jazz singer, said, okay, we'll take a risk, and they liked the idea, and of course, Sweet Honey has its own track record, and it fell right into place, one behind the other, and started shooting in September, and we finished it in January. Total production cost $71,000. But that was because in large measure part of those fees reflect working with the union crew and an extensive crew at that. I mean, we had lighting directors, 4 or 5 cameras here and there. I picked up freelance crews when I came up here to New York, say she Ben Chavis or Carol Louise, or in Boston when Alice was teaching up in Cambridge. So I also picked up freelance crews as I had to pick up the different cameos and commentary, people that made commentary. Well, part of the proposal process or the prospectus that you give them includes your version of the treatment or the story outline of what you're going to do. So they already have in hand on paper how you conceptualize the idea, the history of it, why it's important that this program be done, and how you're going to render that visual.
And do they hear that well?
They can.
Having the money to do the first, the third.
Right. They can do that. No, it did not happen in this case. I experienced no pressure to change my concept or take out certain political points of view or cover up this part or cover up that part. Some of the issues that I wanted to address within the context of the group could not be addressed within the format because of time. And that's where I had to, you know, my editor came in. But I did not get any pressure from public broadcasting.
Can you talk a little about
the issues
that were from the group? You said it was
really,
you said
it's
better for
the
worse.
Right. We had the struggle with it, you know, no question. There's nothing without struggle, right? There were opinions as to who should be in my particular profile, who I want, and what I want my sister in it, and I said, well, it's great, I like your sister a lot. But here's what we gotta do in an hour, and your particular profile is 3 minutes. And I want everybody to know about you and your family relationship in 3 minutes. So that I think if you take your sister, no, I really must have my sister. Those kinds of, there was not much discussion around music, the selection of music that I chose at that time. I say, of course, the music expands each year. And let me preface all this by saying that you must see Sweet Honey in the Rock in person. There is no technology yet made that can produce the experience of being there while we're doing it. So there were those kinds of personal concerns that were at issue. The selection of music was not often one, except if they felt they were off key on a song, and really, they gave me all the things that they did not want included at the top of the process. Everyone got to screen their own particular footage individually. They got to screen it together, the 6 of them, all of the footage, which was some time and commitment on their part because they're always traveling or working, so, you know, to earmark a kind of hours to just sit and screen raw footage is not fun. And I was at disposal to them 24 hours a day. If they wanted to see the footage at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, I was there to let them see it. So that we were constantly communicating. But there were, you know, those kinds of personal issues that arose, some concerns about which songs and to select, and sometimes the order in which people appear, what cameos they felt were best comment on their music, or who they felt politically they were aligned with and should appear on the show. But they were not heavy discussions. But when you one against 6, it seems heavy at the time. Most often than not, we were 7 people all together. Okay.
Any question about
the
story? I was wondering about whether you were going to include some kind of discussion about what it means to be a female musician.
Yes. I thought it was really important that I, as a woman, do a film for female impersonation. I wanted to be enlightened. I wanted to attack some of the myths I have in my own head and my own biases and I think a lot of this carry around just because we don't know what the art form of it is about, as opposed to people that take it on as a lifestyle. Okay. But within the longer version, there will be a history of female impersonation from its roots in Asia, in the Middle East, in Africa, going up through the Shakespearean setting and on, and how the jewel box fits within that particular history. There will also be a discussion of male impersonation, because we don't often see anything of female impersonation. Great, Lacage is great, torch song, you know, it's had some success and public recognition now. We can go home singing about it. But male impersonation has not been discussed. And why? Right. And it's different when you see a 65-year-old drag queen or male impersonator as opposed to seeing one up on a Broadway stage or, you know, something that's pleasant and theatrical. When you're dealing with people's lives and their experiences in the art form and how they took their own lives through the process and feel good about that and now are 70 and 60 years old and reflecting on it, it's a different thing. It really is a different thing. And that's where sometimes your funding gets a little wild. People aren't, you know, maybe I can't invest in a drag show. I don't know about that. Maybe I will invest in it.
And how about Stormy, where you're going to ask her a question?
Yes. She goes more in depth and it's a lot longer and not a lot longer. Time moves really fast. We try to put together and get all the ideas. But she talks more in depth about that. Her childhood experience of being a mulatto and a parent. Her father was a white man, he was a black man. And all that, growing up in the circus and growing up in the show business kind of environment. She's a fascinating person. And then there'll also be vignettes of former chorus members. So we'll pull some of the guys and women back to reminiscing. Most of it they do. Sometimes they adapt other people's works. Like 7 Day Kiss is a Jim Jordan poem, which they put to music. So that they work both with original concepts and Be Aware is a Burt Bacharach tune, the one that Evie sang at the top. So they adapt stuff, you know, original concepts, and shape it to their own voices. That's the thing. That's when they put their stamp on. It's the process. How it's in.
No, they have no
guarantee that even though they've invested their money in your show, that it would make it.
So is that why you,
Iris Storm Productions is my production company. It's a small business. It's a family business, but you are looking at Iris Storm Productions. When we have money, then there's that we accrue, and you know, that's a problem. But in the meantime, we can answer the show with me. But when I apply for grants, I usually apply as an individual artist or apply through a nonprofit organization. And that organization acts as a fiscal agent for the money that comes to me through that nonprofit status. And Ronnie myself here, say Women Make Movies, that's in New York, or the Black Filmmakers Foundation. I know there's Wild Women Productions, which is also a feminist producing agency like Grove Work. But they produce shows. Grove Work actually books performers, and sometimes that puts up shows.
Anybody else?
Are there films that you would like to do that had been postponed because of not getting any funding at all or any kind of support?
Betty Carter, Sweet Honey, and the Jewel Box are a trilogy that I've been carrying around for years. And each one in their time has come to fruition. So I really can't say that I've had any block. It's been a lot more difficult to get money for this idea because it deals with the gay experience or it deals with the trans person community or male impersonators. You know, this is the rise of the right. We're not interested in it. We're interested in guns right now. And certainly not queer people. Mm-hmm. Certainly not free. And so it's been a little harder finding the money for this. It's taken us about 2 years can really drum up their money. But that's a little shorter than Betty Carter. It took 2.5 years to get money for Betty. It took 3 years to get it.
So because she would have the institutional affiliation, as opposed to an independent film, like a truly independent
say that
does your institutional affiliation help you in your contact or your fundraising? Or is it strictly on your own strength?
Yeah, I think it is that. Of course, when you're working, you see, I think that my work would not have a venue on the networks. I mean, I don't seek Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the understanding of it in terms of racism and sexism is quite apparent when you decide that, hey, I'm going to be a filmmaker. The history of it is standing there before you, and you understand it, it's a given. But I think that I looked at public television as a way for people to have access to the work on massive levels. I mean, you never know where it is, who's seen it when. And it's a venue that has some range of the kinds of voices it wants to be heard on these stations. The networks, this is not interesting. This is not really gorgeous. You know, it doesn't have that commercial factor. It's not bankable. So, it's not that I'm saying that I'm not, interested in, I've worked in the networks as an engineer. It's not that I'm not interested in. I'm interested in tackling all the venues, but I'm not interested in pursuing them. If they come to me, great, and they like my ideas and, will allow me creative control over them, and that's the other process. Then I'll go right along, and then lots of people can see it, because most black people and most women are watching the tunes of the networks in the downtown theater in 3, 4, and 5, So you gotta go where the people are too. I mean, it's not gonna happen in some verified screens like this room, not to, denigrate this conference, but to say that this is a very specified and rarefied process here. Not everybody's running out to see black independent film festivals or women's films. Massive numbers. But we will be watching NBC occasionally on TV, PBS. We will be at the theater. So now I'm working on a dramatic feature that deals with the relationship of two black women. And that may take some time. That may be the case in point that we raised. But it will be a first one too. I'm learning while I'm doing it. I'm a young producer and I'm learning with each. It's like a driver's license. Then you learn to drive. After they give you the drive, go out on the holiday freeway.
I
would not be surprised.
And yet neither of the productions was any special.
Well, I let people speak for themselves. And I'm not about forcing people to come out and feel that or express themselves in any way that I would like to hear them express themselves. But I do think that some information comes across without it even having been said. Sweet Honey was a case where you were dealing with 6 people, some of whom were gay at the time and some of whom were not. And it was one of the issues that I wanted to bring up in the film, but time constraint got into it and I would have had to allow everyone a voice on the subject. And that would have taken a huge amount of time. Of course, the situation with people changed over time, so the sexual preferences changed over time. So now it's not in and it's not dated in terms of, who's who. We had to kind of gear it to, I brought Stormy down from New York. Most of the members who are still alive and well are here in New York City. And I brought Stormy down to Washington because WETA provided me with the money to make that work sample. So I geared it toward a Washington locale, being the Howard Theater, one of the premium black theaters in the circuit. So we kind of geared it toward generic topics that would give funders or any kind of benefit screening audiences an overview of what the topic is about, and say the goodies for for the production.
I think that the documentary form is most educationally useful form.
No, I think it's how the film or video maker use whatever genre they're involved in. And I think subject matter dictates what genre you use. Certainly it's easiest in documentary, inherently so. But I think that the thing about documentaries is lifting the format beyond its own mundanity. and in fact making it a living format, having people talk about their own experiences as opposed to a narrator giving you what you're supposed to glean out of this and summarizing it for you. You do that. The artists present themselves to your inner work to you, not a narrator. Those kinds of choices are political. Select not only the images, but the audio track, what the total commentary is. I've seen some pretty politically moving feature films. And some very politically moving cartoons. Yes, I do. So, you know, I get hired to do some commercial work. So I am interested in using all the forms and finding them out and just using the best one that's best for the subject. Don't ask. It's not getting done. The artist in me is real mad at the teacher because the artist wants to work and do some things that are really hot on the ground now. But I've got to teach, and that's more than a full-time job, you know, preparing three classes, one of which is a grad class, and trying to give your best that way. Also just trying to break down into some systematic explanation what you do when you take it for granted, when it's second sense, and you just do it, and trying to explain that to people class by class, you know, segmenting it. It's really hard. But the main lesson of all this is organization. And I just had to be super, super organized. This hour is for this, and 20 minutes of phone calls followed by reading, and then I will call CPB and see how the, you know, when the checks will be coming through for the mailbox like that, you know, where I can pick them up. You know, you just say, I'm into that mode.
And
it's
going to be created or anything?
It's difficult, but I think it's possible, sure. And I think it's possible because you get feedback from not only situations like this, but students who just, you know, are coming to you and they're open, or they know more than you know and they're educating you, as opposed to dealing every day in the business where everybody's kind of jaded and waiting on their check or, you know, wondering what's next or in the next grant cycle. It's good to have people enthusiastic about it. It feeds my spirit. And then, you know, that's another component of this process in the film producing, and that's divine. That's the process you cannot teach people, working with their own intuition, listening to the voices that are around you, the spiritual part of the equation that is called independent producing. This is a divine process at work, but I'm not going to be explaining it so
much. How did you decide which figures that were not in Sweden and you have to prove? The little vignettes that you had, how did you decide which one? Did Sweet Honey Rock have ideas?
Sweet Honey had their own list of, you know, we definitely cannot put this footage in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I had their list, I had my list, I came up with a rough cut. I did the individual profiles first, showed each of them their profiles, showed them all the profiles together with each other, we discussed it.
But if people reached out and say Alice Walker, the former members of Sweet Honey, did you have any systematic way of deciding who was?
Yeah, I tried to look at the areas that music, that Sweet Honey's music impacts on.
Mm-hmm.
So of course you had feminism, you had black people, you had political struggle, you had, you know,
mm-hmm.
those kinds of references. Pete Seeger was one who ended up getting deleted out of the final version of things. But yeah, I tried to do it by having a representative cameo that would speak to different areas that Sweet Honey's music impacts on. And I presented them with a list of people that I wanted to pull in for these cameo bids, and they gave me a list also of the people they thought in, and we worked it out and narrowed it down to 3 or 4. So we were always working collaboratively, you know, which can be great, and it also can be very maddening. Getting into the editing process. Then they looked at the rough cut, so they saw a generic version of what it would be like ultimately, maybe a 20-minute version. And they said, okay, that looks all right, guys.
Did you make a decision to focus on the individual people more than the group or just collective? I guess I was kind of expecting more to be collective, you know, the show, but kind of.
I did in fact think that it was very important for audiences to know Sweet Honey beyond a group concept, because the individuals feed what ultimately is the group presentation. It's the energies of each of them in the order that they're in, you know, in this unit, or the synthesis of voice and personal experience that makes Sweet Honey beyond. Also, when you saw their working process on film and video, it was not very much different than any other board meeting. You know, they're all sitting around a table because they had a certain attitude about how they wanted to be presented. So they wouldn't give me any ragtag rehearsal. Mm-hmm. They were very formal and systematic. If I caught them, I said, look, I need some meeting stuff. And I'd like to see the rehearsal. The rehearsal was as good as the performance. You know, the meetings were board meetings in the sitting room, so it did not translate. So I tried to rely on just the interactions of the group and the concert in that way, and some little snippets of like before performance stuff that you saw in Shirley's sign of the profile to give you a sense of pre-show, a little hints of it, but nothing, you know, really heavy. I think individually as they talked about it, you got more, and I hope that as they talked about it, you got more and more of the pieces of what it takes for them to put together. And Bernice, of course, talked about the history of the group, and I think in that way it gave an overview of how they do what they do, and what, where their music is, what kinds of music they do, how long they've been doing it,
what they
want
to have.
They like that. They hadn't thought of that, and they like the concept a lot. They thought they would inform people, and it makes it more personal. That's why I picked this medium. I felt the only way you could really get at Sweet Honey was to be right up on them, be in their homes, watch them during the day, you know, that kind of thing. That makes it more personable as well. And that's also why I selected the video as a medium. Betty Carter spent 30 years in jazz, so hers is film. You can project that at 16 feet by, you know, you can see her singing, you know, that kind of immortalization process of film projection. You know, you pick it. The subject matter dictates a meaning for me.
Just a quick question for the subject matter. It's going to be kind of true. What about financial and so on?
Well, I think it's depending on where you spend your money. I think it'd be about the same cost depending on what level of sophistication you want to work with in the video. The CMX editing that this show is put, Sweet Honey is put together with, and Drewbot, costs $300 an hour to edit in that suite. You can edit the film much cheaper than that, you know, a couple of bucks a night. Unless you transfer the video, and you know. So I think it's where you spend your money. I think that you spend more money up front with film in terms of equipment and stock. Stock, of course, being made out of silver, and silver prices rising, the cost of the stock is always rising. So I think that it's where you spend your money. In video editing, you spend a lot more down the line with transferring and editing, and any special effects that you want to put in, you know, the paint box. Up and out, and I think that I'm really encouraged by the fact that more black women are taking their life choice or career choice. And I think that's going to stretch the mediums themselves, because people are going to bring their own experience to their vision and expand the technology, or utilize the technology to expand the vision that we open to see on the television. I think that the technology is being modified to such a point that it's truly going to be accessible to everyone, especially now if you're super. You need two great cameras, and that's called super camcorders. But the size of the technology is such that everybody can shoot at this point. It's not about a matter of lugging around an airy BL to get the thing, you know, and you only put it on your shoulder. Anybody can shoot a thing. Anybody can shoot half an inch. I mean, it's accessible. It's accessible to the point that the home video market is one of the largest elements of media right now. You know, everybody has the ability to do it, if you live in a certain economic place.
If you live in the media, you make broadcast power, you don't make more media.
Mm-hmm.
Offer.
Right, as you refine the art, when you can get your hands on things that are equipment, and it becomes more verified, more exclusive, more discriminative. So access will, I think access will continue to be a political issue that faces independent film movement, even as the technology changes. Because it really is based on economics.
Yeah, the feeling I got from the video you asked, it's not criticism, but was please be heard individually as powerful people and then collectively very powerful. Is that a concept that you wanted to bring out, and how did you do it? Because you did it very well. It was this incredible feeling of power, and I'm just wondering if that was a conscious thing or they just were.
I think it's conscious in that they are, so it exists.
Mm-hmm. But did you want
to,
maybe my question is, and point here, they are, but how do you, there's a difference between people being powerful and a group being powerful, yeah, and you being able to communicate that in a video.
Okay.
It could have just blocked. I mean, you know, they could be, but you have to go see them to see that. But somehow you communicated that, and I was wondering if that was a conscious thing that you did through editing, to try to convey that power.
Well, I think it is one of the major things that I wanted to get across. Mm-hmm. I think that audiences bring something to that equation too, because I can design it a certain way, but if it doesn't move you, mm-hmm, so you bring something to it too, through process, after, through the screen. So you respond to it in a certain way. Mm-hmm. But yes, it was a matter of seeing the individual highlights, individual strengths of people, and then in the concert setting, seeing that as a collective energy, and then seeing how it affected the audience. Also, it's a matter of how the music builds. The music builds at a certain arc.
Mm-hmm.
And that was calculated. Mm-hmm. It started out with gospel sound, which is, of course, the root, in terms of Afro-American roots, to black music. So it started with something generic. Everybody could, go for that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some indication of the journey by the theme of the song.
Mm-hmm.
Showing the way, okay? Then it builds up into like a political song, called it. But it's soft too. And we start building up to more rousing, traditional, congregational singing.
Mm-hmm.
So it builds at a certain peak too, to give you a sense of slowly growing power. So hopefully by study more and more, you're with it, and you feel as if you're there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was counting.
Mm-hmm. But
what? Anybody else? Is there something in the process of fundraising for the robots? I'm just going to distribute some things to you. Is that the way with it? It's not something open solicitation before, but it's the chief investor that I've been doing it for you to keep an eye on in the fall. And if you have gifts, send them out. I appreciate your attention.
And thank you.